The Gates of Horn and Ivory, by Francis Rosenfeld. Chapter 6. The Patterns of Reality. Persephone sneaked out into the gardens the next morning, grateful to have a few quiet moments to reconnect with her plant companions. Everything had spirit in the underworld, even the rocks and the streams, and her beloved trees were the goddess's most trusted friends. The poplars flitted in the twilight, their gold leaves shimmering in ways which would have gratified Demeter, who always thought her daughter's attire too plain for a goddess and often urged the latter to show off her riches. Persephone didn't need to impress in the nether realms, where even the leaves of the trees in her garden were made of pure gold. She grabbed a handful of the soil beneath her feet, picked out the glossiest onyx, obsidian, and jet pebbles to place in her little knapsack and let the rest fall to the ground. The muses had inspired her to create a mosaic that morning, and she was on a mission to pick the most colorful gemstones for its motifs. She heard footsteps behind her and closed her eyes tight, annoyed that somebody found her. It was Rhadamanthus, who dropped to one knee when the goddess turned around to face him. "Greetings, milady. I hope you find the gardens pleasing after so long. We tried to keep them as beautiful as you remembered. And for that, I am grateful. I missed my old friends. I'm relieved to see them thriving. What news, judge?" She smiled. "When you have a moment, my queen, there are a few legislation details I must share with you. They're rather urgent, I'm afraid." When are these things not urgent? Persephone thought. Or critical. Or of the essence. "By all means, Rhadamanthus." She smiled politely and stretched out her arm to guide the latter towards a large oak surrounded by a wraparound tree bench. "It's about one of the souls you brought back, goddess." The latter went straight to the point as soon as they sat down. "A certain Yardeus from Corinth, it seems he felled one of Eris's sacred boars, and was cursed to roam the earth mad for all eternity after he ran him through." "For killing a boar?" Persephone jumped, outraged, her memories of unrelenting and ever more extreme blood sacrifices still fresh in her memory. "We should curse half the world to Tartarus if that was a killing offense. Nevertheless, God Ares is not well pleased, and complained to Zeus, who contacted your husband. Have you run this by him, then? It is he who sent me here, milady. He asked you to pass judgment on the matter, since you found the mortal worthy of amnesty." Persephone was all too familiar with the bloated egos and the petty power plays of Olympus. Her cousin, Ares, had never encountered a slight he didn't deem deserving of death and Tartarus. "And what does Ares want?" she asked, as politely as she could. "He demands the offender be returned to his wrath, so he can double down on his punishment." "How does one double down on punishing someone to roam the earth mad for all eternity after they killed him?" Persephone mused and then replied out loud. "Can we tell him I brought the sinner here so he could be tormented forever by the fires of Tartarus? I fear the god would want to verify that for himself, mistress. On a regular basis." "Of course he would. Tell him no. He will be livid." Rhadamanthus grew paler. He had had run-ins with Ares before and found the latter as cold and unforgiving as a snake, with none of the flexibility of the latter. Besides, Rhadamanthus wasn't sure the mortal wasn't indeed deserving of his punishment, since he was guilty of the wrongdoing exactly as stated in the law, and his rigid abiding by its letter, rather than its spirit, had earned him quite a reputation in the underworld. "Yes, he will," Persephone smiled. "Where is the mortal right now?" "In the Asphodel Meadows," Rhadamanthus replied. "Roaming around. He probably doesn't remember a thing." "He remembered nothing when I picked him up too," Persephone pondered. "His too exposed in the meadows. We need to move him immediately." Lately the underworld had seen way too many lookaloos, trained to sneak in and out unnoticed, and she didn't doubt Eris's spies would not take long to appraise the latter of the mortal's whereabouts. "Move him where, mistress? All the domains are so porous right now, it would be way too easy for Ares to send someone to retrieve him. I'll wager he would send one of his faithfuls to Tartarus itself if he thought they could send word from there to inform him of the goings-on. We're going to put Yardeus in the one place that nobody can ever be sure of, the land of dreams. Hiding him in plain sight doesn't seem like such a good idea. He'd be too easy to kidnap there too, Rhadamanthus objected. Not if we make 100 replicas of him, or 1,000, Persephone continued her train of thought. That is the whole point of letting him run loose with endless copies of himself in the land of dreams. Nothing is real there, nothing is ever stable, or permanent, and by the time anyone spots the real Yardeus, he will already be somewhere else. Wouldn't he get lost and mad there? He's already lost, and as far as mad goes, I'm sure the land of dreams is not nearly as bad as Aerisys Roth. It is settled then, Rhadamanthus summarized. We'll tell Ares you brought Yardeus here for punishment in the fire pits, that unfortunately Tartarus is completely off limits to anyone other than its runners, and will thank the god for bringing what he thought to be an egregious mistake to our attention. As for the 1,000 Yardeus sees in the land of dreams, who is to tell whose wild flights of fancy could have temporarily brought them into being? That's not exactly what I said, Persephone objected. And how gratified will your husband be by your wise judgment, Rhadamanthus continued, pretending not to hear her last comment. As you well remember, Ares never fails to send new citizens our way. The world of the gods ran on favors, diplomacy, and power dynamics just as much as the mortal one, so Persephone took the win, reformatted to fit the dented ego, and went on to the next subject. We had started discussing legislation regarding the circumstances of self-defense with Minos before you left, and the proposal was shelved, awaiting your return. They spent the next hour nitpicking the wording and details of each article of law until a mutually acceptable draft started to take shape and they both agreed to let it settle before they revisited it with improvements. It was never wise to rush the writing of new laws, and in a place unaffected by the passing of time, completely unnecessary. Rhadamanthus bowed and left, satisfied to have put quite a few sticky messes to bed, so he could focus on his other never-ending tasks, which were just as demanding. He liked Persephone, who, in his opinion, which he wisely kept to himself, was surprisingly rational, insightful, and efficient for a woman. He always assumed otherwise about the fairer gender. One had to make allowances for the differences the gods saw fit to put between the sexes. What a blessing to have a full conversation completely stripped of emotional outbursts, personal biases and, may the gods protect him, tears. Persephone watched him leave, deep in thought, while working out 1,000 contingency scenarios for the Land of Dreams, and running them through in her mind's eye, at great speed, to assess their odds of success. Their intricacy grew exponentially as the full picture started to take shape, and after a while their elaborate mazes became too difficult to follow, so she opened her knapsack and started putting together a large mosaic, to get a better feel for the solutions in the abstract. The perfect geometries of the spheres underlight her complicated patterns, keeping them always in ideal proportion to each other, and imparting rhythm and scale to the whole while allowing for enjoyable variety. No matter how complex a structure, its fundamental principles and components can always be traced back to simple laws, which rule eternal and unbending, the same for all of reality. Once someone has a simple rule, one can apply it again and again to create unbelievable complexity without fearing it would break, or turn into chaos, without even having to follow its development, now governed consistently by its own inner laws. Persephone worked fast, forgetting herself, her circumstances and time, consumed as she was with creating this apparently chaotic masterpiece, made easy to follow by the simple rule only she knew, and which she deemed safer not to share with anyone. Infinite variations on a theme. To an outsider, the large mosaic looked like a beautiful, but mindless piece of art, born of a woman's whimsy and unbridled emotions, or maybe like another one of the pampered luxuries, serving no real purpose, which Hades liked to dole upon his young bride. She had started the project at the center, so she could expand it indefinitely in any direction, and left plenty of room for new developments and pattern changes, a fully adaptable map for her use only. She had kept a few gemstones for herself, though, a couple of beautiful ones that stood out, and which she figured she could use for other projects later, especially the giant obsidian, the size of a plate, which she figured she'd ask Hephaestus to polish for her, and turn it into a mirror. When she got to a stopping point, Persephone breathed in deeply, still preoccupied, and went to look for more black crystals for her mosaic, but her mind was elsewhere, so she called it a day and started off to the Asphodel Meadows to look for Yardeus.